Hello, guys, and welcome to the latest edition of the Black Spin Global podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah, guys, welcome to our Indian Wells review show. And we have special guest Anastasia Fulawonsu of the Ground Pass podcast. How are you doing, Anastasia?
I am good. A little hot and sweaty because
tell the people where you are.
Let me show the people. We're in Miami, baby.
Oh, damn. Crazy.
Yeah. You know what? All I care about is like when Lucy and Eugene can join me here, we can just have like fun times at these tennis tournaments. Soon.
If they have a tequila bar though,
trust Lucy to go to the tequila.
Then you guys know, because me and that honey deuce were already like this, for example. That was not even tequila. So
listen, we'll talk more about Miami later on, but like we should get into Indian Wells, because that is kind of, yeah, that's a tournament that well, to be fair, it's currently ongoing as we record this, so it's the women's final being played right now. But before we get into Indian Wells, let's talk about some news quickly. So yeah, the WTA's rebrand. So it's WTA Rally the World. I mean, it's caused a bit of a stir on the socials and like just, I guess, tennis Twitter. What are your thoughts in terms of just like, you know, the new look and yeah, just kind of the whole rebrand. Like, what if we can kind of get some thoughts and opinions? Anastasia, do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. I work in the film and television business. I think I've said that on this podcast before. Thank you guys for always having me back. But there's a little thing we say that all news is good news. And I always say, you know, it's one of those things that the rebrand was so controversial or so, it just stirred the pot so much. I'm like, for a whole week, everyone was talking about the WTA. All you heard was WTA. You were like, WTA Green, WTA Rebrand. Oh my God, WTA. And I cannot help but think that was good for them in a way. So even if were all the elements of the rebrand perfect? No. But I think things like this, a rebrand, take time. It's not going to, just happen and we're all going to just love it. I don't think we're in a world where everyone's going to love whatever they do. But I think in terms of the rebrand and controversy, obviously a lot of people were talking about the new color, even though it's not really a new color because they still carry the purple. But the one they launched with was this sort of lime green thing. I did not personally like that color, but the purple is still there. They just, I don't know. I think it was a bit strategic. They purposely didn't launch with the purple. They launched with the green, but now everywhere you look, you still see, like even at the tournaments, all the signs, it's still purple. It's not the green that they launched with. So I think they stirred the pot a little bit. They're changing things around. I think the most important thing is the new storytelling they're doing. I don't know if you've noticed on their socials, a lot of the players now have these individual like moments where they create a reel for them or a short video for them. And even during Indian Wells, like during the tournament, I mean, I remember when Camila Osorio beat Naomi Osaka the day after the match, they met up with her just to like, they did a quick video reel kind of thing. Like, how did that feel? And I feel like that sort of like storytelling helps the WTA. It helps people get to know who those players are. I can bet you half that audience had no idea who Camila Osorio was. And maybe they see this video, more than half did not know who she was. But maybe they see this video and they're like, oh, okay, let me get to know this person. So that's how I feel about it. Are the elements of it I didn't like? Yes. But the general idea of it, the heart behind it, I appreciate.
No, I hear that. Lucy?
Yeah, well, to be fair, I already did like a TikTok video on this. And I kind of went like into a deep dive. But long story short, I just said that I wish people gave the WTA a little bit more grace, because now the focus has gone back to the players. Every sports establishment needs the players to push the sport. People don't know who these players are today. And like, even on that video, an example that I gave was a content creator was going around the Australian Open asking people, hey, who do you think is going to win the Australian Open? They were mentioning Roger Federer, Serena Williams, like, only one or two person mentioned like the new players today, and some of them couldn't even pronounce the names properly. Like, they were like trying to guess and like, I know this name because I've seen it around, not even because they actually know the player. So from the moment you're having that, there's a massive issue. I don't mind the colors and the designs, because you can, the second I saw the branding, I thought to myself, you guys are really trying to capture non-tennis fans. And one thing that has changed over the like branding or marketing world is simplifying logos, using colors that people will attract to, because I'm sorry for saying this, but like, someone might not feel like watching a WTA because the logo is a woman and is purple. You know, now you have green and you have like flashy things and you have something that's a bit more modern that can easily attract other people. So yeah, I'm like really excited. And you made a good point. This actually, we did speak about this the whole week, and the budget was high. I mean, the people that were taking, the photographer that was taking pictures of like their looks outside of the court is a photographer who took a picture of Beyonce's album cover, Cowboy Car, a black photographer as well. So the blacks are getting hired, the budget's getting high. So shout out to the WTA. I do not understand. Like, anything to push the women's sport, I am here for it. Rebranding is always starts like this. It always starts with everyone's just chatting crap and everyone complaining. You need to give it time. At the end of the day, at least something is happening. That Arab money is becoming useful. Just saying. Mad. That everybody didn't want.
what one thing I will say, that the launch party looked very, very lit.
It did.
I think it was held in Indian Wells or like on the site.
It was in LA.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was in LA. So Indian Wells, which is in Palm Springs, is like 2 hours away driving. But yes, it was held in LA. I mean, that was like, guys, it's to invite Ava DuVernay
crazy
to launch your event. And what I heard on the grapevine is she's going to be partnering with the WTA to do more stuff. Like, that's massive. She's a massive director. You know, it's not small what they're trying to do. And like Lucy said, it's just like, we need to give them grace and time. It's not going to happen immediately. Yeah. You're not going to snap your fingers and it'll change.
But one thing I'll add, and like when we move on after, just I heard Taylor Townsend speak at that launch party, and she basically said that tennis can do a lot more in terms of marketing the players. And like it can do a better job, basically. Mm-hmm. And she said there's like a lot of potential there in terms of like allowing players to kind of show their personality. And yeah, hopefully this rebrand kind of helps that. So I think a lot to be excited about. I think one thing, just watching on TV as Miriam Andreeva's just beaten Aryna Sabalenka, incredible. But yeah, the graphics have changed. The graphics have changed, and that always takes a bit of like getting used to, but now I'm kind of used to it now. Like, it's kind of grown on me, whereas before it's like, oh, this is weird. But yeah, that for me now, I'm like, I'm kind of used to it, and it's like okay now.
And also, sorry, I want to add one more thing. When we did our Zena Garrison interview, if you haven't checked that out, guys, please do. She's mentioned
it was so good.
Thank you.
So
she
good.
Mentioned something so important. She said, with the WTA now having a black woman as a CEO, she needs support. So a lot of you are out here chatting, complaining. Just know that all of these changes are happening under her. And I bet you she's not getting the same support that she was supposed to be getting, like these other white men CEOs that we've had. This is a black woman coming from the basketball industry into tennis. And there are definitely some people out there probably thinking, what's going on? So yeah, everyone's entitled to their opinion. But just know that when the opinions and push and critiques go towards a black woman being the boss, it can get tricky. So yeah, so shout out to her, shout out to the team, and looking forward to the rest of the rebrand for the season.
For sure, Archer, indeed. No, well said, Lucy. But before we move on or get into the actual tennis, we've got to talk Coco Gauff taking the Oscars. Like, what a moment that was! In she was wearing, was it a muumuu dress?
Yeah. Custom, and she had two of them, muumuu dresses.
Because she was also at a Vanity Fair after party.
Yeah,
she posted that cool picture of Serena, and I think Sabalenka was also there.
Yeah.
How good is that as well? Like, just for tennis, in terms of having, yeah, like one of our main like athletes at an event like the Oscars.
Yeah, it's massive. It's people go to these events to be seen and to promote themselves, and by Coco being there and then Arena at the Vanity Fair event, like that's marketing all in itself, because people see that and they're like, oh, Coco Gauff is at the Oscars. Tennis. It's weird how people work. I also love what you said, Lucy, about the rebrand, that they did not make it for tennis fans. No. Tennis fans will watch tennis if it's in a parking lot outside, which we're in a parking lot outside in Miami, but they will watch it wherever. We want to attract people who don't know the sport, who think Rafa Nadal is still playing tennis. Like, that's who we want to attract. There are people who didn't know Indian Wells was happening. They're like, why are you in California? And I'm like, oh, for Indian Wells, what's that? The Indian Wells is what we all call the fifth slam, and it's such this great tournament. There are people in the world who don't know it's happening.
Crazy.
You know what I mean? So I think having her in such a public forum that is more sort of, you know, mainstream was so huge. To have Miumiu, who is like really getting into tennis, all the tennis girlies are all wearing Miumiu. Like, they're definitely building a relationship, which is great, because I look at the WNBA, okay? I look at the WNBA here in the States, and those girls are everywhere. Their matches are booked, full, sold out.
To a point where people are even telling Angel Reese to focus on the basketball. That's literally how much they are everywhere.
They're everywhere. So why can't our girls, tennis girls, who are the leaders in being paid equally in women's sport, like they're the highest paid female athletes. Mm-hmm. Why don't people know who they are?
That's true.
In the States, it's great. Coco Gauff has become a mainstream name, but we need more of that. And the more they're in these environments and they're invited to the Oscars and all this stuff, I think it's just great. And for Coco to have that moment, beautiful. It was so good.
I think that it just, to me, it just shows to you the issue with the, well, let's say tennis culture, really and truly. I think it goes back to, everything always goes back to my number one point, gatekeeping. And what I mean by that is because, and this is no disrespect to the agents out there, yeah, but we need agents that know how this generation works, how Gen Z works, how, like, I feel like they still try to do the same old things. And I feel like a lot of the players and the agency team don't know really what to do or grasp certain things. That's why tournaments are so late to know how to really attract the other
younger
people. So
younger appeal,
people.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you let younger people who are into tennis know behind the scenes, they can join and help out, all of these ideas were coming through. Hence why all of these independent ideas, I really hope I'm not like getting in trouble for this, but for example, the ATP is now in collaboration with Overtime Tennis, right?
Really and truly though,
the ATP should not need to pay so much money to another platform to try and push the sport. Why do you need to pay for a whole other platform to be doing that for the entire year? If it's for, like, let's say only the US Open or only the Wimbledon, fine, like a little short period of time. But with all the money that you have, all the resources that you have, really and truly, you should have internally people that know how to do the interview, because what they're doing with the players is nothing really new.
Out of the ordinary,
you can't tell me there is not a young tennis fan who's qualified, who's a journalist or whatnot, that can do, that can't do what they're doing, or even better. And it's better too. And I love, don't get me wrong, I love the overtime tennis.
It's not as good content.
It's great content, but that's the issue. Why are we doing that? There's no way. Do you know how much money the ATP has? Sorry, do you know how much access that they have? I'm so sorry. Like, I do not understand why I do that. Maybe that's the side of a business that I don't understand. Maybe that's just how it goes. But from the outside, to me, does not make sense. But again, it always go back. Gatekeeping. Let people work in the industry. Let people, or at least go to young people and show them, hey, tennis is a great place. You don't know how to play? Fine. Come and be a journalist, come and be a photographer, come and do an editor, come and do this, come and do that. And guess what? You get to travel around the world, you get to speak to these people, you get to ask these questions. There's so many things to do, but people are not aware of it because the people in the industry are gatekeeping and not letting these other go. You have the same agent that's been in the industry for 50 years. Come on.
Yeah. Again, I have to agree with you in the sense that as someone who has been on the outside and is now slowly making her way onto the inside, what I see in there is old ideas where, again, it's so weird to me because I see other sports that work with less, have less, do more. And it's almost this weird kind of like, why fix it if it's not broken, except it is broken, I don't know. What I can say from the last couple of tournaments I've been to, they are young people pushing their way through. They are people who are suggesting things. Hey, how about we do this way? How about we do this this way? What if we do this a little bit different? So it's coming. It's just so slow to move this big ship that's tennis. I wish they were moving a bit faster. But I do think they have to see what's happening around the world for them to be, how can we be behind? You know what I mean? So hopefully they'll course correct and we'll all be better for it. It's not even, it's just to make it better. So.
And I think to close as well, like, I think we should kind of give ourselves a pat on the back because we are all kind of doing our own little bit, like to kind of help that change. So right. I think we deserve massive credit, not to kind of blow our own trumpets, but I am.
No, we should. But,
no, sometimes you have to.
Sometimes you actually have to talk to your shit. Yeah,
this is the thing. So I appreciate everything you guys have said because it's 100% true. But let's get into Indian Wells now. Finally, so Anastasia, you were actually on the grounds for us, which was fantastic.
Yes.
What kind of stood out for you in terms of were there any kind of standout matches specifically? Because you were there for qualifying and a few of the opening rounds.
Yes, I was there for qualifying. And I think, first of all, in terms of the fan base, I don't know why I want to start there, but it was a pretty diverse fan base. Like it was nice just seeing everyone from seemingly all sorts of backgrounds, economic and everything. Like I was just like, oh, this is like a really great fan base, and they got the tennis. That was another thing. I've been to different sorts of tournaments, and I think depending on what tournament you go to, maybe they're more casuals than most, but for some reason in Indian Wells, like we would be on the practice court, which it's the practice court, they're just practicing. People would be quiet, dead silent. And I was like, what are we? You can move. It's the practice court. But nobody would move. They would wait till the point was over and then they would move or they would say something. I just thought, wow, it's a very tennis educated crowd. I really enjoyed the fans. I enjoyed the fans. They knew what they were talking about, and it was a great group of people, all ages. So for me, the first thing I noticed for sure was the fans, because I go to a lot of tournaments and sometimes I'm like, okay, maybe we could we could diversify a little bit. But Indian Wells definitely did a bunch of that. So I was happy with that as well. Matches. Any specific match? There were just so many right now. I don't know why I cannot latch on to one exactly, but yeah, you know what is so funny? And maybe because he hasn't been doing so well coming into Indian Wells, but all of Artifice's matches were just so, like, he was so energetic. He was like, I will win tennis today. Today, I will not lose. I will win tennis. And just seeing his energy and the way he like brings the crowd in, you know what I mean? Like, he's a showman. He knows how to play the crowd and like bring them in a little bit. So I have to say, all the matches I went to that Artifice was, they were just fun. Everyone was into it. I keep telling this story. The way I found out who Artifice was, but was at the U.S. Open a couple of years ago, where people just kept calling him the King of New York. Oh, and I'm wow. like, who's, I was like, he's French, first of all, but okay. But he does that to crowds. Like, he almost becomes the hometown person. He's not from your country or wherever. He just brings people in. So I really enjoyed like watching him in person. He's a good watching person.
What about interviews? Because you did go to a few interviews and yeah, ask some really good questions as well, which we'll talk about later on as well. But yeah, any particular interviews that you really, I don't know, really stood out to you?
Madison Keys, man, she's something. I think Madison Keys has so much potential to reach the the very top of the game. And she's so measured and smart. Like, I don't know. And it's weird to me that I feel like all this is new because she's been around for so long. But I feel like she has reached some level of peace and maturity and just like self-belief that she just walks into that conference room and just says her, you know, she says it as it is. And, you know, it's okay. There's a little behind the scenes, I guess, but you know, people ask crazy questions sometimes in the press conference. Like, sometimes you just hear, you're just like, what are you asking now? And all the players, all of them are very kind of like, they'll try to find a way to answer the question. Madison will just look at you like, what? And she'll be like, sorry? Well, yeah, she's an adult. She's an adult and she's not gonna, so she did that a couple of times when someone would ask a question and she would just be like, and then she would answer it, but you know, she would let you know.
Her press conferences have always been pretty good. Like, she's very engaging. I feel like her and Sloane Stephens are like the best to, they just keep it real. They're just really chill, yeah, really relaxed in general. So I won't be surprised if she's even more like that now, with the way, you know, her season is going. Like, she has her Grand Slam now, like, you know, so I won't be surprised. I'm not too surprised that basically you mentioned her.
I don't know if I want to hit this now. I mean, I did Giovanni Impeshi Pericard, he was great. You know, he's very quiet but sure of himself. Like, there's a confidence there. He is tall, guys. He's tall.
He's very tall.
He had to bend over to get through the door. He's tall.
Crazy.
Yeah, he's very tall.
Like, wow.
Very tall.
And then Taylor Townsend, who I think is always good for a great interview, interviewed her with Katrina Siniakova, and that was definitely a memorable one as well.
Fantastic, which we'll come back to. Conditions, because the conditions were kind of crazy. So I think you kind of escaped the rain, though, didn't you? Oh, you didn't?
Rain, yes, I escaped the rain. But we need to talk about the sandstorm.
Oh, sandstorm, because I was going to talk about, well, at nighttime, it gets like so cold. You see people like wearing jackets and like hats and scarves. Like, what the heck? What is that
and,
about?
And this is called tennis paradise, mind you.
Crazy.
So it's the desert and it's springtime in the desert. So definitely, it was colder than apparently it's ever been. Like, this was a pretty cool time.
Wow.
And in the sun during the day, it would be comfortable. It would be nice. But the temperatures would drop. The moment the sun went down, it would drop. As in, I was wearing a sweater, jacket. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from New York. So I do think the Californians were going a bit overboard.
To be fair, they're not used to it. They're not used to that type of condition. So, you know, they'll always be dramatic about it. The same way that we're dramatic about how hot it is during summer.
Yeah, this is true. That's so true. Used to That's things. True.
So, yeah, I don't blame them.
But there was drama. I mean, there was hats, puffer jackets. It was Jasmine Paolini, Sarah Arani, their doubles match. And it was at night against Asia Muhammad and Demi Schur.
Champions.
People had blankets. They were covering themselves. Puffer jackets, hats, gloves. I was like, okay. But yes, you're right. They're not used to it. So it was cold for that region. But for me, that was nothing compared to the wind. The first day I was there, I got sand everywhere. And I'm not playing tennis. I'm not breathing hard. I'm not running around. I don't know how these guys are doing it. Because they were playing qualifying. And it was so windy, so sandy. I couldn't see. I kept having to go back inside because the wind would get in my eyes. The sand would get in my eyes. And then I would go back outside.
Oh, man.
And so that was the first day I was there. Apparently, it was worse the day before. But then throughout my stay, it was just pretty windy. It was very, very windy. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if those conditions affected a few matches because, I mean, I can barely rally. I know for sure I could not. The ball would go nowhere, you know, if I was trying to play in that weather.
Yeah, the players definitely were talking about the conditions. I remember, I forgot the match it was, but Carlos Alcaraz, after one of his wins, he wrote on the camera, very, very, very windy. on the camera lens, and I thought, okay, well, yeah, he's talking about conditions there, but yeah, it's weird to see it like on TV because you like Lucy said, it's known as tennis paradise, so you don't expect, I mean, wintry conditions in LA, like, but fair play, and yeah, you kind of, I guess, suffered through it. Doubles as well, like, any doubles matches that stood out to you? Or did you actually end up going to any?
I went to actually a lot of doubles matches. I went to two of Asia Muhammad and Demi Schur's. Like, they were just playing so well. So I went to two of theirs. But I don't, you guys know Evan King and Chris
Christian, yeah, that, Harrison.
That pairing. You know, I've just been blown away by what's happening with them right now. So, like, go from qualifying to winning a 500 in Dallas, getting to the finals in Del Rey, winning Acapulco.
500, crazy.
500, and then getting to the semifinals in Indian Wells. It is so impressive what they're doing. And I had talked to Evan King last year when I went to a challenger. So I got to know him then. And he just talked about the struggles of being a doubles player in general. Like, you know, first of all, challengers are so tough. Imagine being a doubles player in the challenger circuit. The way they make their living is getting into grand slams, but if you don't have the combined ranking that can get you into a grand slam, you can't really play with your partner. And Chris, who's his partner now, was injured, so his ranking dropped. So Evans was playing with, like, he played with Chris Eubanks, he played with Dreddy, he played with a lot of people during the Grand Slam season. And this was the first year where they were like, okay, your rankings back up a little bit, we're getting wild cards, let's go for it, let's try. And now look at that. I think they're in the top 40, 30 in doubles already. The year, we're in March. You know, I don't want to jinx it, but I'm like, Grand Slam season, let's go. You know,
honestly,
playing so well, so well. The only they were beat by the number one doubles team. Like, that's who beat them.
Yeah, in the semifinals. And the eventual champions. Yeah,
and the eventual champions. champion. Mm. So I'm really excited for them. I really enjoyed watching the doubles matches.
Just on staying with doubles, because again, some of the questions you asked Anastasia in those presses were fantastic, and you got a really good response from Katerina Siniakova and Taylor Townsend when you asked about the US Open mixed doubles
mixed
format.
Mixed doubles, yeah.
This year.
Yeah.
We're going to play basically what both Katerina and Taylor said, and then we'll come back and give you our reaction.
Well, I don't like it. I mean, when they move it to this week, no one's... I mean, I'm going to play singles that week. So I don't think it's really nice change for doubles players, but they said it, they want top singles players there. So they said what they want to do, and I don't agree with it. I think it's not anymore the mixed doubles, it's exhibition. Mm. So I think they should do it like last year. I think there was an exhibition like this, and then they kept the normal mixed doubles, because I don't think even the scoring is good, because to play nowhere till four games, anything can happen. So it's
games?
Just, yeah.
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 Just
so personally, I think it's really sad news for doubles players. And to saying it, I'm singles players, but I love to play doubles. I love to play mix. And if they move to this week, no chance I'm going to play it. So I don't agree with this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's super tough.
I think they didn't ask players. I mean, it's also very disappointing that they kind of doing it for players, but they didn't ask, or I didn't get any notes or like they gonna do it.
Yeah, I think it's super tough because, you know, I feel as though the U.S. Open is trying to be innovative and, you know, groundbreaking, but like Kat said, ultimately, like, these are huge decisions that affect a lot of players. Mm-hmm. You know, for me personally, you know, it is going to sound weird, but it's like I'm benefit because of my ranking and I'm American, so it's like I'm have a potential opportunity to be in the draw, right? Not based on my singles ranking, so I would need, based on the rules, I would need a wild card. So I would have the opportunity to be able to play this event. But, you know, I do think that it takes jobs away from a lot of doubles players that work really hard and, you know, that grind day in and day out, week in and week out. And I always say that doubles is a lot more difficult because you're splitting the points, you're splitting the money. So you have to do double the work, essentially, in order to be able to break even or make money. And you have to travel more. You have to play more weeks. You have to do more, you know? So it's like, it's not one of those things where you can have one good week or two good weeks and, all right, I'm in the top 10, you know? And so, and also the range and the points are so much closer that it's easy for you to slip and fall and your ranking to change. So, you know, it's tough. And I think that, like Kat said, the players weren't at the top of the priority list as a whole. I think that it was very much tailored towards wanting big names, you know, singles players, a lot of players who typically don't play doubles, but are...
But they actually said it. They said it loud, I think. Yeah. They said it that they want those top players
there. The
top
singles.
So it's kind of like, you know, practice week for them, because it's really nice for them to play for the money and play some mixed doubles, and you know, of course it's entertaining for the people, because those names, they are loud, the people know them more, because that's how it is in this world now. So I mean, I get it, but they could do it as an exhibition and not like changing, you know, the because so now it's 16 teams and you're gonna be mixed doubles champion for to playing till four games.
Yeah. It definitely does change the vibe in terms of like the weight of a Grand Slam mixed doubles. You know, like I made to the semis with Ben 2 years ago, I made the finals with Donald. Like, for me, it felt like a Grand Slam. You know, this doesn't feel like a Grand Slam, like casting. It feels more like an exhibition. So, you know, I think that, you know, we'll see kind of how it all goes and what happens. And ultimately a lot of the top players usually don't play the week prior to a slam. Most of the players arrive in the middle of the week and practice all the way up until the beginning of the tournament.
They're
going to
love it,
so
because I think
you're already there.
It's going to be played just 2 days, no?
Yeah, 2 days.
So it's just like...
Well, damn. I didn't read all the rules. So,
so it's really good for them. They're going to practice and yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. But like, you know, ultimately, you know, I hope that I can play. You know, I mean, I'm going to try my best to play and see what happens. But, you know... I think it's kind of like a litmus test, and we're going to see, and hopefully they will take the feedback from the players, from everyone, not only the ones that participate, but the ones that also have the negative feedback and say, hey, like, this is how it is affecting us. Because a lot of the doubles players bank on being able to play two events, you know, doubles and mixed. So
and
when
I
you
think,
take that away, that makes it a little difficult.
I think a lot of them, you know, they are covering whole season from these Grand Slams.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's, for them, it's really tough, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, first we had Katarina, who was very honest. And I really appreciated her answer. And also Taylor, too, being an American. But, yeah, Anastasia, like, what was your, like, response when they were, well, yeah, kind of gave that reaction and, I mean, such an honest response.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that was actually the last question. You know, we'd been talking for a while. The interview in total was about 20 minutes, and we'd been talking for a while, and no one had asked that question. I was like, well, we got to ask this question. It's a big thing coming into 2025 U.S. Open. And, you know, Katarina had some very strong things to say, which I love that you said honesty. I appreciated their honesty. There's a way that sometimes people can sort of like, you know, if you finesse an answer so that everyone's happy and like whatever. And they didn't do that. They were very honest. Katarina talked about how it's a bit of a slap in the face to doubles players, especially since they were not consulted. And just how difficult it is to be in that. And what I also loved about it is that Taylor and Katarina, they're also pursuing singles. Yeah. So I know this was pitched as, oh my God, we're going to move it to this day. It's going to be in fan week. All these singles players are going to be able to participate in it. But no one, you know, flipped it and reversed it and asked, what about the doubles players who are going to have to play qualifying because they want to try and get into singles? They're not going to be able to play it because they're playing qualifying during that week. So it was nice hearing such an honest response from the other side. And I also liked Taylor's honesty as an American. She's like, look, I'm probably going to get a wild card. Taylor Townsend has been the star of mixed doubles for 2 years now. The first time she did it with Ben Shelton, their matches were bumper. I mean, everyone was at their matches. The second time she did it with Donnelly Young, same thing. Everyone was at their matches. So she's already a draw. There's no way I don't see her not getting a wild card. So I loved her. She was like, look, I'm probably going to get a wild card, but...
And she was she was also a finalist last year as well. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was a finalist, so...
So it's very much a... You know, she was sort of like, but I see the other side. I see how this affects my fellow doubles player and how it could affect, for example, Katarina. She probably won't be able to play if she has to play qualifying or not or whatever it is. So, yeah, I'm so happy I pushed it and to ask that question, and I loved their responses.
That was fantastic. Lucy, do you have anything to add on that? Or
I mean, we kind of spoke about it. I think for me, it's like... I don't know. I can't say this, but I'll tell you guys off.
one of them ones.
It's not even an opinion. It's something that I heard basically. But I'm just curious to see. At the end of the day, the mixed doubles, the doubles players are not happy, rightfully so. My only hope is that whatever the US Open is trying to do with this, they can. I hope it's a thing where it will help mixed doubles in general. If we do all of this and it doesn't, it goes back to my theory of this was just a money grab which is, you know, it is what it is. The French Open has announced, what have they announced? They announced something, I can't remember. They announced something that they're doing with the mixed doubles, which I think is, I think it's a thing where, let's say if you're on court, if you're on site, basically the mixed doubles is going to be played on the main court style. And people can come and watch it for free. Yeah. So they made, yeah. Oh, let me double check now. But I know that they did a change for that's something. Cool. Yeah. Oh, where is it? Oh, I can't see it.
Sorry, while we're guys, on mixed doubles as well, we must shout out Taylor Townsend for that unbelievable get in that match against, it was Sophia Kenin and Ludmila Chinnock. We posted it on our socials. Like, what an athlete she is, man. And again, Zena Garrison, she said it during the interview, our interview with her. She was like, people don't understand how great of an, how much of an athlete like Taylor Townsend is. Like, she's a fantastic athlete. And that point basically summed it up. Like, she was literally out of camera shot, but somehow makes the lob.
Lobbed.
and it was just incredible. Unreal.
Yeah, no, just watching her play, it's so, I don't know. I love watching her play because she fights for every point. And I love athletes like that. Like like you said, she was out of camera shot. You know, there are a few players who'd be like, oh, well, there it goes. There's the ball. It left. No. She was going to go get that ball and she was going to make the point. So it's a joy watching her play. It was really fun watching both of them play. She was wearing this, this is also another interview question. I think I might have left the recording running, so you might get a piece of it. But I was asking her, she was wearing this pink dress.
Yeah, I heard it.
Okay. Because I was sort of like, oh, who makes the dress? And she just laughed. Katerina was like, oh, okay, now you have to go buy more. And I was like, what's happening? Who's making the dress? And she didn't want to tell me. So I'm hoping something's coming because, you know, I think we talk about this a lot sometimes, but with doubles players, but especially someone like Taylor Townsend, she's a number two doubles player in the world. She's won two Grand Slams. Where is the sponsorship deal? And I'm sure they're working on it in the back, but hopefully that pink dress is part of it.
Facts.
Yeah, so sorry. This was the reason why I was struggling to find this is because it's not as public yet. But Tennis Weekly podcast, they posted this. And basically, Roland Garros will make the mixed doubles final at this year's championship open to all ticket holders. So basically, it's going to be, you can watch it on the Philippe Chatrier. And yeah, just to help give a little bit more doubles profile. They put it on their website. The sources, they put it on the website. So it looks like it might be like a tester. So it will be the first match of the day on show courts. But for now, it explicitly says mixed doubles. So, yeah, I mean, Eugene, you did mention that other US, other Grand Slams might follow suit. But I'm glad that French Open did it in a way of like, it helps, you know, everyone. So we shall see how that goes. So we'll get two different type of mixed double stuff going on.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to seeing how that all looks. Staying with doubles, and you did mention them, Anastasia. Asia Muhammad and Demi Schurz, they were the eventual champions in the women's doubles. Unseeded American-Dutch duo. I want to say this is their third tournament together. But yeah, en route, they took out the third seeds, Jasmine Paolini and Sora Rani in the first round. And then, yeah, Siniakova and Townsend in the semis. And then they beat Oliva Nichols and Teresa Minikova, if I'm saying that right, 6-2, 7-6 in the final. So shouts out to Muhammad and Schurz. I think that was Muhammad's second 1,000 title. Schurz, she's won a few in her time. But yeah, fairly new kind of partnership and clearly a winning one. So good to see them doing well. And also King and Harrison too, they did reach the semis, like you mentioned. I want to say they were wild cards in Indian world. So yeah, good to see them like continuing to like ride this wave. But yeah, let's get into the action in terms of singles. Keys, so incredible winning streak of 16. came to an end in the semi-finals against Aryna Sabalenka in a strange match. Like,
I almost missed it.
I mean, it was only what, 51 minutes long. It wasn't on for very long.
That was crazy.
I do feel it. I don't want to spend too much time talking about that match, because for me, there's not that much to talk about in terms of that match specifically. But I do feel like, yeah, players, sometimes you just have a bad day at the office. Like, and I feel like that was one of them for Keys. I don't know if you guys have anything else to say on that.
I'm going to say is Keys was literally having a February off, chilling, making her coffee, having a time of her life with her husband, enjoying her Grand Slam win, and came back and made it all the way to that round. I am not mad at all. And I knew, to be very honest, I knew it was going to be a very tough match for Keys, because one thing about Sabalenka, she's very, very competitive. Obviously, no one likes to lose, but she's someone where, like, she takes it. I feel like if the media wasn't too tough, you will even see more of her emotions when she's losing. Look how she reacted when she lost that Grand Slam final at Australian Open. So I knew coming into this match, it was going to be a tough one for Keys. But honestly, not mad. Like, this girl's been playing since, and they were out early. She was chilling. She came back like it was nothing. You literally think Keys was like really like on form. So I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it when you're losing to someone like Sabalenka. Like, is not. Yeah, I'm not mad at all. I'm really happy, and she looked comfortable. She looked good. She was looking well. Again, it was going to be a tough match either way. I think that day was, you could tell it was just a bad day in the office, because even her, she was like, what's going on with my serves?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Nothing is working. Like, she, even when she finally got a serve in, she was like, I can actually do this finally. So yeah,
when she won the one and only game, because it was one and love.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, exaggerated celebration.
Exactly. Yeah, when you look at the way she was playing before that, it was way better. So I generally think it was a thing of like, I'm having a bad day in the office. So you have that. And then on top of that, you're playing somewhere like Sabalenka, who's already a tough player, and Sabalenka's coming in on smoke. Like, you took my three-peat from me. Yeah, it's game over. So
yeah,
it's not a massive deal.
Yeah, I mean, with that match, I think, I knew it was going to be tough. I just didn't realize that Aryna Sabalenka could lock in like that, because that was a level I've never seen. You know, like, it was like, I was telling my friend, actually, I was like, it was like a robot was playing. Like, she was like, oh, serve, oh, win, okay, oh, hit. Like, there was no, it was just like, I'm on a mission, I'm winning this match, done. And yeah, I was very taken aback by that. But just, I was actually, while we were talking, I was trying to pull up the matches that Madison played to get to that point. Up until that point, she was crushing, dominating.
Exactly.
The Bencic match, that stood out for me.
Wasn't that 6-1, 6-1?
Exactly, just crushed her, yeah.
Crushed. And with just pure power. I'm a huge fan of big hitters. I love a big hitter. So she was like, I mean, it was everything. I was like, wow, Madison on top. Like, that's like a dream. I would love to see her on top. And it was such a joy just seeing her own it. Like, I am now the best player. I'm going to win it all, you know? And then you hit Aryna, which that was something else. She was on something else there. But yeah, I think, just like you said, this is someone who hadn't played since the Australian Open. I'm not worried. Yeah, I can't wait to see her play in Miami. It'll be great.
For real. Staying with the women, Goff, third seed. So she fell in the round of 16 to Belinda Bencic. That was a free set match. I wasn't watching that match, I'm not going to lie to you, because I was working. So I wasn't able to watch or pay full attention, unfortunately. Coco Gauff, she's now 21, by the way. Like, what the hell? Where's time gone?
Crazy. You know what's crazy? I feel like she's like at least 30. just with the amount of time I've seen her on tour.
Because she burst onto the scene of 15, was it 15? She
15.
Burst
onto the,
like, 15. That is nuts. Mm-hmm. Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me, Coco Gauff, she played really well against Miu Sakkari, and I feel that match was slightly overlooked because she has a losing record against Sakkari. Still does, to be fair. I think it was 5-3 coming in. So they played 8 times. Sakkari beaten her 5 times. And yeah, she'd won 3. But yeah, Gauff beat her in straight sets. So that head-to-head's now 5-4. But I thought the manner in which she won that match, considering Sakkari was the player she lost to last year in the semifinals, and just the matchup, I feel like Sakkari does enjoy playing against Coco, but this year in Indian Wells, like it was all Coco, like she was just too good. What are your thoughts on Coco Gauff in terms of her run at Indian Wells?
You know, I always have appreciate, you know, the whole winning ugly thing. Because I always say a win is a win is a win. She won, you know. You are completely right about the Sakkari thing, because even I forgot about it. I was like, oh yeah, she did play Maria Sakkari, you know. So I think that was really overlooked, even by someone like me. So I think there was a lot of focus on her form after that. The Belinda Bencic match, which I watched, was way better. I think, again, that was a little bit of Australian Open leftover in a way, where Bencic, I feel like, probably felt she should have won in Australia, but ran out of gas. So she was going to fight harder for this one. And in general, you know, I just feel like Coco already knows how to win. She's a winner. Period. It's now having to work on, I think, her confidence, because for me, I think the whole winning ugly thing, I don't think I'd ever actually watched it live and in person. You see it on TV and you watch it. It's actually really different being so close to her like that and seeing the distress. You know, I felt hurt. I was like, oh no, like, you know, so you just wanted to be like, it's okay. You're doing okay. You know, you're doing okay. So I think it's maybe she needs to like know that she's the winner, because I remember when we saw her at the United Cup, I was like, that's it. You know, Grand Slam, we're going to win all of them.
Taking it all.
All of them. That's what I felt from watching the United Cup. So it's been interesting to watch this time period with her. But again, her ability to problem solve and win anyway is something I wish I had, you know, because I think sometimes if things are not going well for me, you know, you can almost spiral a little bit and you're like, woe is me. And then you give up, and she just doesn't. So I think there are definitely positives to take away. And then you hope she can find that belief and confidence again. And we can see United Cup Coco Gauff, US Open Coco Gauff, just like swinging. Because when she's like that, unbeatable. Unbeatable.
I agree with that. Lucy?
I think for me, it just goes back to what Serena said last year at the US Open. And she was just like, there's nothing wrong with Coco. She just needs to, a bit like what Anastasia just said, she just needs to have confidence. But at that time, it was about her forehand, which she fixed. You know, her forehands, since I'll say the Asia swing till now, you know, way better than what we were dealing with this time last year or even the year before. So I think it's just a continuous battle of that. And it's weird because Coco is confident in general. She talks her thing. Like she's about it. You know, she's very open. She's always like, yeah, like, even when after she loses, she's like, I don't care, like, where it is. But I think once she gets on court, I think sometimes she... it's weird. It's because I don't want to say she doesn't have the confidence, because she does. But I think when it gets challenging, I think she maybe just overthinks it. So I don't think it's a confidence thing. I think it's just an overthinking thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Yeah, because everyone's talking about her confidence, confidence, or confidence. But she is very confident. If not, she would not be where she is today, especially as a black girl. So I feel like, especially as a black girl, she has so much confidence. I think it's just that when she gets on court and, you know, these players are becoming more and more challenging. And again, they saw what she's able to achieve. At the end of the day, I think people also underestimate that players know when they play against Coco, they have to play their best. So she's also dealing with high level from her opponents. Like, you know, like, yeah. Benchik already, she's credits to her since she's given birth. She's been on crazy smoke. And we just had what we had at Australian Open. So she came in like, raw, like, it's tough. And that's one thing. And that's another thing as well. I find it funny how when the draws were out, everyone was like, oh my God, her draw is so hard. So now that she lost to like the round 16, is that everyone forgetting that? It's like, oh, this is that. No, she had a very tough draw. Mm-hmm. And everyone was really playing good. We were, unfortunately, the conditions of the Indian Wells robbed us from so many good matches. Because when you look at the draw, and then you look at the match, you're watching the match. First of all, respectfully, yeah, how can I say this without getting in trouble one more time? Whoever decided to change the condition of that court, I really want to have a sit down with you and for you to explain to me why. Because that and the wind and the weather, guys, we were robbed from so many good matches from Indian Wells. Because I'm looking at the draw thinking, I'm not going to sleep tonight. I'm putting on the match. Come to find out, I'm snoozing because you're boring me, because everyone is making faults left, right, center. It's windy. It's crazy. We're stopping here. Like, we've literally been rotten. And I was so excited about Indian Wells because, again, made a TikTok about this. And I was basically telling like casual listeners, hey, tune in for the Indian Wells, because we don't know who's actually going to be doing the madness, because all the top players, both from ATP and WTA, were not on their best form. So it's like, it's open here. And turns out I was right. Look who just won the title from WTA. Who would have thought the final would have been Holger Rune and bloody Jack Draper.
Not bloody Jack Draper's top 10 now. Put some respect on his name.
No. Bro. Let's keep
it real. I'm taking a piss.
Let's keep it real. If I came and told you Jack Draper is going to be in the world's final, you would be like, aight, cool. When I came out the club last night and I saw the scoreline, I was like, am I waved or am I really seeing what I'm seeing right now? This is what I'm saying. Like, all of these things are not my... What I'm trying to say is, all of these things are never taken into consideration the second Coco loses a match. Oh, she's this, oh, she's that, oh, she's this, oh, she's that. But when we're talking about 100 other players, yes, there's this, there's this, there's that, there's this. And I'm not saying there's no improvement that Coco needs to make. She has to make, but at the end of the day, it's here. Because she has the skills.
Yeah.
Very well. Yeah. So one thing I'm going to add on that, and like, again, people are going to say, oh, you guys are like, what's the word? Like sympathizers or apologists for like black players, whatever. But for me, Coco Gauff, the one thing she needs to work on is her poker face, because I feel like when she gets that down, oh my word, like it's gonna be a wrap. And like I get she's just turned 21, like she's a kid.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be real. But I feel
and
like
maybe once... that's
Go on,
no, I was just gonna say, I was like, I feel like maybe that's what I meant in terms of just like you see it on her and you feel for her.
You're right.
Exactly.
It's like I shouldn't see that.
This is the thing.
You nailed it. That's exactly what it was.
For me, that's the only thing. And it's going to develop, because for me, that just comes with experience and the more matches you play. More years on tour. She's 21. I know, like we said, she's been on tour since 15. But like, that's still developing. And I feel like once that develops, watch out. So... Yeah. I feel like we spent enough time talking about Coco Gauff. We should also
By the way, don't ever apologize for being black player sympathizer. This is Black Spin Global.
Oh, hell no. I mean, come on, Lucy.
this is like, who's going to be our ass? Like, yeah, you guys talk about black players anyhow. Yeah, this 100%. Is our platform. If you're not liking the sympathy that we have for the black players, exit that way.
Well said. Jasmine Paolini, the sixth seed. So she also lost in the round of 16 to Ludmila Samsonova. Did you guys see any of that match?
It was late, so I missed it. When I woke up, I was like, wait, what?
Did you see the handshake? People were saying, oh, like, why such a salty handshake from Paolini? I was like, shut up, man. And even Samsonova, after the match, Samsonova said that, yeah, like, they practice a lot together as well. Like, there's no animosity there. Paolini, yes, she was clearly pissed off.
But she, like, got mangled. I mean, I don't understand. What would you expect her to, like, give her a hug? Like, bro, I'm going to point the middle finger and get out. Like, hello?
This is something that I want to, like, write a dissertation on, make a video about. What is the deal with the handshake?
Oh, if I am
losing a match, if I lose, you want me to hug the boys when they're all like, oh, yeah.
And look, for me, that's fine as well. It's fine.
Like, hello? Hello.
It's fine, but don't expect me to do it. Yeah. And I exactly. also do not begrudge anybody who I was like, what handshake? She just lost the match. I don't know. I'll just never understand that sort of, like, a handshake.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
But either way, I'm glad that Paolini has made it all the way there. Obviously, her single runs the last couple of weeks have not been the best, but, you know, also need to keep in mind she was injured, so the fact that she came back, made it all the way, I didn't have really high expectations anyways, mainly because she came off for, like, her injury and stuff. And I said this to Eugene before, like, I just feel like maybe she might be not feeling the pressure, but she knows that she has a lot. Paolini has a very tough season for her coming up because she has a lot of points.
There's a massive target on her back now, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. So, and again, she got into the, like, top 10, top 5. So same as Coco, the players are going to be playing their best against her. They know that she's a powerful hitter. They know that she can move really well around the court. So it's always going to be a little bit more challenge for her. But yeah, at least she made it round 16 because I was a little bit scared. But when I at the beginning, but I'm not too mad at that. And who knows? Maybe this is the type of match that she need for her to be like, all right, no, I need to put my foot down and get some things coming because clay season is coming and all that. So yeah, but she seems good. I mean, yeah, the handshake was upset. She was in one of the Miami basketball games or hockey games.
The Heat.
Yeah,
she's living life, man. She's the queen of Italy. Come on, man.
I don't like seeing players wear ankle braces, especially that don't usually wear ankle braces. I know Murray, he did, but that was more like that was a standard thing.
He just always did, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But, like, I think there was a time when I'm pretty sure Felix, he hurt his ankle and he was wearing one for a while and it just never looked right. And I feel the same with Paolini now, but I know it's like a peace of mind thing. So I'm hoping for her own, like, sake, she can kind of get to a point where she can kind of, yeah, say, I don't need this anymore. And then that would just kind of, well, put me at ease anyway. But I mean, more importantly for herself. But yeah, like you said, Lucy, I'm not worried about Paolini. The commentator did say that she's having a bad season. And I was like, whoa. Like,
she literally just won a doubles title in
Qatar.
That was a 1,000. That's still something. The fact that she did that and in singles, she wasn't really. It was a fit. Like, come on, let's stop. The season that started yesterday, like
2 minutes ago,
man.
And it's not like she's been losing like first rounds. Like, she's been going maybe two or three matches in. Like, so let's just hold.
And she was injured, like I said,
and that too. So yeah. Before we move on to the men, I want to give a quick shout out to some of the women. So Hayley Baptiste, who was a qualifier, very nearly took out Danielle Collins in the second round. Collins was the 14th seed, and that match went to 3 sets. Were you there for that, Anastasia?
No, that was one of those late night ones.
Night matches.
So I watched it from home, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, that was close.
It's a shame Baptiste had to play Whitney Sigwe in the first round. And she did win that in straight sets. But I mean, we always hate when black players have to play each other like early rounds. It's so annoying.
Y'all know my theory anyway, so.
Stop it. Claire Vianguinu, she also gave a good account of herself, I thought, against Victoria Azarenka, who's a two-time Indian Worlds champion. That was a straight sets defeat, but the second set went to a tiebreak.
The second set?
Yeah.
I've never seen her play in person before. That was my first match that I saw Claire Beattie play in person. And again, I'm just like, oh, once she harnesses everything, like when
there's a player there, definitely.
There's an outstanding player there. I was very, very impressed that second set.
She's only 18, I want to say. Let me just double check. Pretty sure
she's
18. So yeah, still plenty of time. And so, yeah, she's 18 years old, like plenty of time. But it's nice to kind of see her now kind of get an opportunity at such a big event. And yeah, kind of, I say announce herself. She didn't win the match, but she gave a good account of herself.
Her all. Like, I think the people who were there would have left that being like, okay, I want to know what happens to her, you know, because I think everyone, at least the vibe, you know, it's Azarenka, the vibe, you know, she's going to take, you know, she's the more experienced older one. But just that fight in that second set, it's almost like she was like, wait, I'm here. You know, and she was like, I can also play tennis. And oh, it was actually a really nice turnaround. I was really hoping that it went one more, but I'm so sure she clearly left with fans from that match.
And also Alicia Parks, she got a good win against Anna Kalinskaya in the first round, did lose to Diana Schneider in the second round. And Robin Montgomery, another wild card, she also got a good win against Jewel Niemeyer, the German. And then she lost in the second round to Marta Kostyuk, the 18th seed. So, yeah, just good to see, like, players take advantage of wild cards and, like, yeah, their qualifying spots. And hopefully this stands them in good stead for Miami. I know Robin's currently playing qualifying.
She won the first round. Let's go.
Into the main draw.
I just want to say about Alicia Parks, because her first round match was against Kalinskaya in the night session.
Which got delayed or pushed over.
But you know that's how she lost last year. Exact same time slot, exact same player.
At Indian Wells. No way. I didn't even think about that. Wow.
It was like a really big deal. I met some members of her camp and was talking to them about it. And, you know, it definitely was a subject of conversation I love that sort of insight into players. Like, it's the exact same match in terms of player, time slot, location, the pressures that can bring, same round, you know, and for her to turn that sort of luck around. Yes, it was pushed the next day, but she really fought to win that match.
So, no, it was a very, very impressive display. Let's get into the men. So, Arthur Theis, 20th seed, he made it to the quarterfinals, as did Ben Shelton, the 11th seed. Let's stay with Theis, though. So what a match against Daniil Medvedev in that quarterfinal. I'm sorry, guys. Daniil celebrating like he just won the French Open. Like, I don't know where
the US Open again.
I don't know where that came from. But
just know that if you boo me today and I'm the one that I won, you are the reason why I won today. He was basically on that same vibe again.
He was on that same vibe.
But just for clarification, because a lot of people thought he was being shady to Theis. No. It wasn't that. It was like the crowd was going crazy for Theis. And like Anastasia, like you said, you know, the crowd was just really for him. Hence why a lot of people couldn't understand why he was always on the show courts and stuff. But it's because the people love Theis. So it wasn't a thing
People complaining about that?
What, complain about what?
Not complaining, but like saying, oh, why is he on the show call?
Yeah.
That's incredible. That's insane.
But it's black spin. Who cares? But yeah, so even at the net, like Theis even like understood. And plus, two match points Theis had to save. He was about to lose that match. So you have the crowd literally cheering for anything Feast does. And on top of that, Feast also is very competitive and he's very loud. And then I had to like literally fight for my life, going to a tiebreak for no reason. Of course, I'm going to be shouting. I just want to clarify that because a lot of people were like, oh, he was being rude and stuff. And I feel like it was entertaining. People don't want entertainment. You're boring me.
Well,
gosh.
One thing I'm going to say as well with Feast, I love his dad, Jean-Philippe. Shout out to Jean-Philippe. That guy, he motivates me when I'm watching tennis. Like when I'm watching Feast play and I see Jean-Philippe, I'm like I'm following him.
Uncle is there for his son, like, man.
Speaking
of Feast, I don't know if you guys saw this. He actually announced that he's no longer with Sebastian.
I didn't notice that he wasn't in the camp.
Yeah, so he put on his IG story today. I'm curious to know who's going to take over. I'm curious to know why, because I don't think he needed to. I think they were working really well.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, it's been a slow start, I think Feast might be one of those players where at the beginning of the year, he has a slow start. Listen, it's not for the whole calendar year you're going to be great. But most importantly, I saw a lot of improvements from him this year so far, even though, you know, I think he was slightly injured as well, if I'm correct. Like I remember he had an early retirement for one of the tournaments before Indian Wells. So, yeah, but I'm curious to know. But again, it shows that he's hungry. He really wants this. I want Feast to win 1,000 titles. So, but 2 years, my personal, I was like, I want Feast and Shelton to win 1,000 titles this year.
It's coming, definitely. It's coming.
Yeah.
I'm claiming it.
Yeah.
Antio Feast and Ben Shelton are going to win a 1,000 title this year. So, yeah, so we'll see how that goes.
And Anastasia, I take it, did you see any of his matches? I think you were at the Gabby or Diallo match.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was at that one. That was, again, I think he just locked in this tournament. He was really fighting. You know, I just felt that in him. You saw it in the Medvedev match. He's like, just really, he wasn't going to lose. He didn't want to lose. And it was this close. I mean, it could have gone, the wind could have blown the ball slightly another way and the match would have been different. So I think it was it was great to watch the whole tournament and like you, Lucy, I don't know why that separation has now happened with Sebastian Grosjean, because I thought they were doing well together. But who knows?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
Shelton ended up losing to Jack Draper. And that was a funny one, because up until that point, both players hadn't dropped a set.
Mm-hmm.
So both playing incredible tennis.
I actually thought Shelton was going to win. I'm not going to lie.
So I did too. One thing I'm going to say about that match, though, I do feel like Shelton is the better player than Draper. Draper's an amazing tennis player, like, don't get me wrong, and I do like him, but I feel like Shelton can do more in terms of, he's got more weapons, I feel, and his ceiling is higher, even though now Draper is a top 10 player, which is fantastic. But I just feel like, in terms of, and I was like thinking about this before, I should have wrote it down, because I was thinking about it when I was watching the match, there's like a too good level. Like, I think Draper in that match, he hit 9 unforced errors. Like, he was just, it was just clean tennis. Like,
wow.
Whereas Shelton, he started,
I think it was
well.
33-9. It was like 33-9, if I remember correctly.
And ridiculous. Yeah. Whereas Shelton, I think he raced to like a 3-love lead in the second set, and then Draper pegged him back. But I thought that match, it just, I don't know, like, for me, It's an interesting one for Shelton, because it's going to basically now, I know he's itching to get back on court and like basically get a win in terms of, and he probably wants to play Draper again, like very soon as well, to put that right, because I feel like he knows or feels he could, or he should be beating him. So I'm looking forward to like more matches between them in the future. And I did tweet that at the end of that match, but I thought with Shelton during this run anyway, just really impressive. Like, he beat Brandon Nakashima, who's a tough opponent, fellow American, 32nd seed. He also beat Karen Khachanov, who's the 22nd seed. Again, straight sets from both of those matches. And then obviously losing to Draper in the quarterfinals. Like, I feel like this has been a good tournament for Shelton, and I feel like it's going to be one that he could possibly win as well, like, in his career at some point. I don't know if you guys agree.
Definitely. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. What I have sort of realized, especially from Ben, I know in his press conference, like, the Americans are really pushing each other super hard. Like, he said it in the press conference. He was like, one of us needs to win this tournament. An American hasn't won it in so long. And he was like, we need to win these big American tournaments. And they were seeing it in more sort of the way of to help grow the popularity of the sports here. So I do know they are gunning for it. And I know he's probably like very disappointed by that loss. Because you're right. I'm sure he's, you know, maybe he's standing outside on a court right now being like, I'm ready. Racket in hand, I'm ready. But yeah, I think he was playing very well coming off of the Australian Open, where he, you know, he got back to that. He plays so well in the Australian Open. It's like his other, you know, he always plays well there. But yeah, so I enjoy him this tournament. People love him here. People love. You think they were lined up for Carlos Alcaraz? The girlies were there for Ben Shelton and Ben Shelton only.
I was going through like our old videos, and I remember literally saying at one point, like, on TikTok, the girls go crazy for Shelton. Like, they are just, everyone is just like Shelton. Like, they think it's Alcaraz, but no, it is Shelton. And that's why when he did that TikTok trend with that footballer girl, the soccer player, I don't know if you saw it, where he was basically shooting a shot. Yeah, the girls were crying.
Oh, is it Trinity Rodman? They're crazy.
Yeah. The girls are crying like, oh my gosh, like, no, I'm loving this, but I'm sad at the same time. Like, yeah.
Because, you know, I just haven't seen, and, you know, in all honesty, I think that's what we need in tennis. We need,
for sure,
the guy that everyone's going to be like, oh, back in the day was, you know, it was, what's his name? Why am I forgetting? Andy Roddick was that guy, you know, he's dating Mandy Moore and whatever. But I have so many videos in my phone of just girls screaming. Oh my God, he touched me. I was like, what is happening? Like, what are we doing? I didn't realize that's how deep it was, but okay. Like, it was.
I'm crying.
Oh my God, I can't believe it. Okay.
Hey, listen, it is what it is, man. As long as everybody's being respectful and it helps the sport, let's do it. It is what it is.
You know, he was so gracious about it, actually, because he was. So this was at the end of one of his practice sessions, and, you know, the crowd. So Indian Wells, I think they're the most accessible practice courts. Like, they're right there. The fans can get really close. The tennis players always sign stuff or whatever. But this one, he was signing balls, taking selfies at least 20 minutes after the practice was over. He was changed, whatever, and he just went up and down the line, up and down the line. And I was like, good for you. I mean, again, it's recognizing, you know, what that means to those kids. You know, and what it means also for the sport, because they're getting fans for life
Ben's a good guy, man. And like, we've had interactions with him as well, like at events. He's always exactly polite, like makes time for everybody. Like, he's just a very likable guy.
His people actually had to pull him away. They were like, we got to go. because he was just going to keep going, you know.
Lastly, Gael Monfils made it to the third round, lost to Grigor Dimitrov in a really, really good match. Again, I wasn't watching that match.
The battle of the onks. So we're having an onk off.
Dimitrov isn't that old. Is he, what, 33?
Brother.
Oh, no, he just seems from that era.
Brother.
He's 33. He's 33 years old.
It's still about the onks, man.
That's crazy. But no, Monfils very nearly beat him. And that was a free set match. Were you watching?
Match of the tournament for me.
Oh,
match
really?
Of the tournament. That was just so fun.
Night session as well, atmosphere.
Yeah, night session. It was fun. They were fighting. It was fun. It was
I love the embrace of the net as well, guys. I'm going to say, yeah. I love the hug of the net, Lucy. Sorry.
To be fair, they're uncles, innit? So
come on,
all right.
Man, they're boys.
So it's all right. Like, you know, they've been on tour since, like, it's been 15 years now. So obviously, the love and support is there. When I'm saying I want more drama, I'm talking about these new things, these new players. You should not be boys yet. The same way Roger, Federer and Nadal were not really boys like that back in the days, now they are. That's what I mean. So they can hug if they want, innit? The uncles can hug. It's all right.
Oh man, but that was a nostalgic match. I don't know, I just felt like we were back in the early 2000s and Gael Monfils and Grigor Dimitrov are at the top of the game and they were playing and it was night session. There was a lot of happy feelings just watching that match. I didn't even care, you know, I was just like, this is great, this is so good.
And also, again, we mentioned him earlier, Jalo playing Feast in the second round, but he got a good win. He was a lucky loser too, so he actually lost final round of qualifying but got in as a lucky loser. Got a really good win against Triple Z, so Zhi Jing Zheng. Can never say his name, but apologies. But yeah, that was a free set match against Zhang in the first round, and then he did lose to Feast in round two.
I just wanted to point that out because I did watch that match too. That was a very good win because Triple Z was serving out of a tree. Yeah. I've actually never seen him serve that well. And each time Diallo would return it, and I'd be like, how? That was an impressive win in my book because Triple Z could have, that was one of those matches where, yes, his ground game wasn't good. He wasn't really holding up in the rallies, but he could have served out that match just with his serve, but Diallo really handled it so well. He's someone that he played a match against Tommy Paul last year at the US Open, Gabriel Diallo. That was the match that really opened my eyes to him and said, this kid is going to be something. Yeah. And I really hope I'm not wrong. And he really, I love his game. I love his style.
No, big fans of Jalo, definitely. Looking ahead to Miami, where you are, Anastasia, fantastic.
Miami.
We've got some wild cards that have been announced. So Victoria Mbuco, the Canadian 18-year-old, she's also in, which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm. I'm only here for one day of the women's main draw, and I'm praying to God she plays on Tuesday.
Fingers crossed.
I've just heard too much. I want to watch her.
She's won like what, three or four tournaments in a row or something silly, like.
Oh, and just like, I'm like, because you know what, sometimes with young players like that, because like you said, she is young. Sometimes when they get into the pro game, you know, that's kind of where they judge their level, like where they're at.
Yeah.
So I just want to see where she's at and if she can, you know, pull out a Mira Andreeva. You know what I mean? So let's go.
Tyra Guan, another teenager, she's 16. She's also in as a wild card, and also our guy Christopher Eubanks as well. So Miami should be very fun, Lucy. Yeah. Anastasia.
I was just going to say, Eubanks just has such a. This is where it all happened. This is where it started, the Miami Open. I'll never forget that match because it was so emotional, and there was nobody on the court because it was just like, it was Chris Eubanks and nobody knew who Chris Eubanks was at the time. And it was also that time, I don't know if you guys remember the footage where Jessica Pegula kept having to clean the court. Like, it just kept raining, start, stop, raining. Yeah, she got out. Yeah, she got out there with a towel. So it was that night. And yeah, that was a really emotional moment. So I think, you know, Miami will always be such a great place for Christopher Eubanks. And let's see if he can, like, stir things up here, you know?
That's a good point. Yeah. So we look forward to Miami. Any closing thoughts, guys, before we wrap up?
No, just looking forward to Miami Open. Make sure everyone tunes in. Anastasia, I hope you have a really good time. And thank you again for being on call, well, on site.
On the ground, much appreciated.
You guys need me on court for Blacks and Blacks. I don't know if I'm going to win anything, but I'm going to try. But no, I just wanted to say thank you for letting me represent Black Women Global, because that's a big thing to help for the trust that you had for me to represent the brand. And I just want to say that you guys are, like, famous.
Stop it. Stop it.
I have never been stopped in my whole life. Three people at Indian Wells were like, "Oh my God, you're Anastasia from Black Teen Global." I'm like, what? Hello?
This is crazy.
I know you. But you're famous, and I was really proud to represent Black Teen Global. So, yeah.
No, that means a lot. And again, congratulations to you as well, because now look where you are. In Miami.
I'm in Miami.
With the ground pass. So fantastic. And we look forward to seeing all the content that you're going to produce whilst out there. So, yeah, man, enjoy. And thank you again.